Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines and Matt Oper. We'll start with Chris. How's it going, Chris?
I'm not too bad. UC still very much in the win column after last week's win, despite the Temple loss 2 weeks ago. How you doing, Matt? How you doing after these last couple of games?
I'm doing good. Based on preseason expectations, we're still in plus territory, so that's always a positive. These two games have been very interesting in terms of kind of projecting forward and seeing what this team is going to be like down the stretch, because they were enlightening, to say the least.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting thing that's happened to the team, especially coming out of the bye week. You know, we kind of knew that Temple was going to be tough defensively, and they were, and the game played out like that. It was a tough back and forth, and, you know, UC really, they really needed to scratch and claw to get any points on the board. And they ended up losing that game. Not so much last week against SMU. I can't remember what the over-under was. I thought it was, like, right around 70. You know, ended up only about 56 total points, by and large, because UC kept shooting themselves in the foot. And really, since that bye week, their offense has just tanked. Like, we knew it was going to be a struggle against Temple, but they continued those same struggles against SMU. And now we're looking at, you know, an offense that was kind of in the 60s, you know, very much an average offense, which was, you know, very, very acceptable for, you know, the youth all over that side of the ball. They're now 98th in S&P Plus offense, and it's been a bit of a struggle the last few weeks.
Yeah, and definitely, I think the biggest thing, well, there's two keys to this. One, Desmond Ritter now has a lot of film, so there's a lot to break down, there's a lot to go on. And the other part of it is, Temple was extremely successful by putting people in his face. And until he finds a way to be more effective in those situations, teams are just going to continue to replicate, you know, that scheme. Some are going to be more apt and more able to do that than others. The opponent this coming week, Navy, is not really equipped to do that, but SMU was. So they're just going to continue to see those looks for the rest of the year until Desmond Ritter shows that he can find a way to navigate those looks and get the Bearcats into successful plays, because the success rate for the last two games on offense was dreadful. And it's not all Desmond Ritter's fault, but a lot of there's just a crispness and a focus that is just not there with the offense that was there prior to the bye week.
So you mentioned, again, the pressure, three sacks in each of the last two games. When we haven't really seen Ritter go down a ton this season, like, the pressure's starting to get home, and it seems like he's doing things like it's taking him a little longer to make his reads, which isn't really that great because it doesn't give, like, the line enough time. Or if, like, the pressure's in right away and he has to get out of the pocket, it just hasn't been a good mix of either one lately. And it's really stuttered the offense. And then, of course, like, they've turned the ball over a ton the last couple of games. And in very inopportune places. They gave Temple 14 points. They gave SMU a touchdown. And the offense just has really just died on the vine as they've gotten down the field. It's been a real major concern.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to the decision-making of Desmond Ritter. It's not like he is a young quarterback. He is learning. It's going to get better. Like, these games are probably going to be as bad as he's going to look. I mean, hopefully, that's what you're hoping for when you play a quarterback this young, is that the progression is there and that they get better from this point, and that this, you know, this kind of lull right now is as bad as it gets. That's the hope. But the biggest difference between pre-bye week and post-bye week is Desmond was very, very decisive early in the year. He either made the simple play right away. If it was a 3-yard route in the flat, which it was for the first couple of weeks, he took it. If it was an opportunity to scramble, he took it. But now the decisiveness is not there. Like, he is hanging in the pocket waiting for things to develop, where in, you know, previous weeks he would just kind of, you know, make his decision quickly. And it's not just about the decision that is being made, it's also the speed with which it is being made. And the speed of thought has not been good since the Temple game. And it really comes down to, I don't think he trusts his eyes right now. And that is understandable against Temple, because Temple is an extremely complex defense. They do things that nobody else in this conference does. They do things that very few teams in the country do. That's just how they have been for the last, you know, few years. That is how they have built their success. That is how they have become Temple. But SMU is not that. And he was doing the exact same things, you know, bailing out of pockets that were perfectly clean for him to make, you know, quick, easy passes to kind of just kind of bail out 10 yards for no apparent reason and to give up on plays. Like, the 4th-and-3 that they went for in the red zone is a perfect example of that. His decision-making just needs to get better. And, you know, thankfully, Navy's on the docket, and they are a tonic for all ill-fated offenses, because they're just very generous, just like UConn.
Yeah, it's good news, and one thing that we need to see out of the offense the next couple of weeks is better protection, like you mentioned, and a better running game. I mean, the offensive line over the last few weeks has been fairly dreadful, and you know, part of me can't blame them. I mean, we're in the second half of the season. We got a patchwork offensive line. We got a former hockey player as a starter. We have a redshirt freshman backup center, and an offense that was basically averaging almost 5 yards per carry on the ground, only averaged about 3.2 against Temple or against SMU, and only averaged about 4.3 against Temple, and they gave up something like 6 sacks across both of those games. Like, that is the recipe for stopping this offense, is stacking the box, getting in Ritter's face, and putting pressure on the offensive line, because the last couple of weeks, they really haven't shown that they can live up to that pressure. And like I said, part of me, I kind of doesn't blame them, just given, you know, what we're working with down there. But it is a weakness on the team that defenses are going to exploit going forward.
I kind of think some of that has to do with some of the play calling has been kind of predictable. Like, I guess you have to have some of that with, like, a freshman quarterback. But it seems like everybody's known what they're going to run. And, like, they're just offenses. I don't know. It hasn't been very imaginative the last couple of games out of the bye week. Like, obviously, Temple gave them fits. And Ritter was, like, just not great throwing the ball in that game. But then, like, turn around and have to throw 50 times against SMU. Like, doing really nothing on the ground, as you mentioned, Chris. Like, Ritter, 17 attempts, counting the sacks, was, like, their leading rusher in that sense. It's just kind of worrisome, because if, like you said, if teams can just load up against the run and make Ritter have to throw against them, like, he can make them pay some, like he did against SMU, like, 350 yards, but like, those mistakes will come. Like, he's tried to force some, and he threw 2 picks in that game as well.
Yeah, I mean, the pass attempts are disconcerting, but it is we always ask our quarterbacks to take what the offense or take what the defense gives you. He took what the defense gave him. They put 8 guys in the box the entire game. Really limited Michael Warren as a runner, and that was their game plan going in, and that will be the game plan of everybody for the rest of the year. They need to find something, whether it's a new concept, a new wrinkle that is going to kind of merge together the running game with the passing game. Because right now, it's like the Bearcats have 2 offenses. They have a passing offense and they have a running offense. And the two, you know, never meet. Like, there is no cohesion between those two things, other than the 3 or 4 times a game where DeGuara will run behind the line like he's doing a blast block and slip out into the flat. They do that play like 4 times, but that is the only time where the offense looks like it's cohesive, you know, a cohesive running game and a cohesive passing game coming together to make a good productive play. I don't really know how you go about solving that the bye week's gone. The opportunity for self-scouting isn't really there. You have games coming thick and fast now. And the two biggest games of the, on the schedule rapidly approaching. So I'm not feeling great about the month of November right now.
Yeah, and one of the quotes that sort of was concerning, I don't remember if it was after the Temple game or the SMU game. I think Fickell said something like Denbrock is teaching, is only telling Ritter to look at half the field or calling plays that access half the field, which I don't know how much that's true or not, but sort of goes into the... It sort of makes sense, given that he has a freshman quarterback, given that he's facing, you know, a much more complicated defense in Temple. He's kind of making it a simpler kind of offense. But it's if that is true, that is concerning, because then defenses can pretty much key in on the fact that if he starts looking left, he's only going to be looking at that half of the field most of the time and shade their defenses that way. And it kind of keys in on the cornerbacks and the safeties on that side of the field to lock down the receivers, knowing that the pass is probably going to come down that way.
I think that's already been happening. It seems like he locks in on somebody, and like that's where he throws it. And it seemed like most of the big plays, at least
he does.
It seems like most of the big plays in the SMU game came when he got out of the pocket and like had to change that type of thinking when like he was able to hook up with Lewis for a lot of big plays.
Yeah, but the to the point of half field reads, that's very standard young quarterback procedure, unless you have just a phenom on the whiteboard, because the degree of difficulty jump from high school to college is there's really no words for it. Everything is so much faster. The defenses are far more complex. Everybody disguises coverages, or at least good defenses do. Talking about you, UConn. So to limit your quarterback's reads to half the field is very standard. And really all we're talking about here is reading the safeties. So if you have, you know, if you divide the field in half and you have, you know, one safety on each half of it, you read based on that safety what he does. That's just standard how, like, in terms of how young quarterbacks are taught to read the game. And it really hasn't been a problem until the last couple of games, because the Bearcats were running the ball at will on basically everybody.
Right.
That gives you a lot of margin for error when you're that dominant in the running game. And the last couple of weeks, it's not just that they haven't been as explosive as they have been in the past. They haven't been efficient either. And, you know, given the choice, I would rather have an efficient offense. But right now, the running game is not being efficient in these last couple games. The Temple game is absolutely understandable. That is a very, very good front that you're dealing with. The SMU one is not, right? Coming into the last week's game, SMU was like 90th in S&P Plus defense. And the defensive line is the strength of that team, but it still was a very average defensive line, and they still managed to completely shut down the running game. So they need to – I really hope that they've been hiding some concepts, some different ideas for the running game to go forward, because right now everybody is just sitting on inside zone. And, you know, if you got eight guys in the box, there's really nothing you can do because you're outnumbered, even with a running quarterback.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to our conversation a couple of weeks ago. Like, we want to see a little more creativity out of the offense. We get that the base is that inside zone when, you know, you're going to feed Michael Warren as much as you possibly can if you're getting success. But you've got to have wrinkles in case that's not the case, to try to spread out, you know, spread out that front seven. So if you do run inside zone, it's, you know, to your point, Matt, it's not eight guys basically jamming up all of those gaps along the line. And, you know, that's probably the most frustrating part, is that we haven't seen that really materialize over the last couple of weeks. I mean, Mike Warren caught a couple of passes last week, but it wasn't like to the degree that I think he could, especially when the success, there wasn't that much success on the ground.
I think the biggest area where this has really shined is the red zone, where it seems like the beginning of the year they were extremely efficient at like ending these drives with touchdowns. The last 2 weeks they're 1 of 5 in the red zone, like period, like just scoring wise. They've had 4 empty trips in the red zone. Like, this offense clearly is not good enough to just end up with no points when they get that far down the field.
Yeah, and these last two games are, if you look at the whole season stats, these last two games are an outlier in that respect because they were extremely efficient at converting scoring opportunities into points, be they touchdowns or field goals. And then in the last couple weeks, it's like the inverse, the complete opposite of that has happened. And let's be real. If the Bearcats in the last two games converted red zone opportunities at a similar rate to what they did in the previous six games, we're not having this conversation at all. We'd be saying, hey, you know, the offense kind of seems a little glitchy and gimmicky, but they win. Like, that would be the conversation. There would not be a come-to-Jesus moment if they converted red zone opportunities at the rate they previously were doing. But all of a sudden, they cannot buy points. And that is deeply, deeply troubling, given what is coming.
And I think it's even kind of reflected back on the defense. Like, the defense has been great, like, pretty much all year. But it seems like it's putting a ton of pressure on them. And they've given up some, like, really crucial drives late in these games that have obviously impacted how the game, like, would end. Like, they let Temple go right down the field at the end. SMU had a late fourth quarter drive that gave them the lead before UC was able to come back and tie the game in the closing seconds. Like, it's just, like, putting them in positions where, like, your great defense has to try to cover a short field. It's really killer. Like, the Temple drive was 75 yards, but the SMU had the ball, like, around, what, like, midfield for their drive that they ended up taking the lead on. So it's, like, putting your defense in those types of positions is, like, obviously starting to bite them again.
Oh, yeah. When you put up, I mean, when you allow 20 points to SMU, you assume you're doubling that. And... Yeah, the way the offense is playing is creating too many unnecessary drives for the defense. And I mean, like you said, Scott, it's the defense has played great all season, but I mean, they are young and there's some depth there more so than the offense, but it's not like you can ask them to continuously get on the field after several three and outs.
Yeah, and right now, like, honestly, and this is, I know we all hate cross-sport comparisons, but the offense right now feels very Mick Cronin-ish, where they don't get easy yards, right? Like, they don't get easy yards at all. Like, everything's a slog. It's either a spectacular reception 35 yards downfield with the defender draped all over you, or it's a five-yard run for Mike Warren where he's dragging people for four of those 5 yards. That's not sustainable for a season. It's just, it's not. And Mike Warren has still been fantastic all year long, but he's going to start to wear down. I mean, the amount of, like, he's on pace to get almost 300 carries this year. And who was the last Bearcat to have 300 carries? Like, DeMarco McCleskey? It's been a while.
Yeah, and we saw, like, even, like, when, like, they, like, SMU threw different looks at him, that they were willing to go away from Warren a little bit. Like, only 14 attempts against SMU. And it just seems like they don't trust the freshman running backs to really have a big stake in the offense. Like, obviously, like, McClelland had, like, one nice run against SMU, but he only had 6 attempts in that game. And if they try to get away from the run, I really don't know how much you want to throw the ball like 40 times a game against anybody coming up. Like, if you throw the ball 40 times against South Florida or Central Florida, it probably means you're going to lose.
Yeah, and to this end, I will give Denbrock credit. He has tried to get he's tried to get Dez a little bit more active in the running game, but the plays that he's calling have not been what you would, like, he is calling plays that would work perfectly for De'Eriq King, right? A guy who is short, compact, extremely explosive, can go vertically very quickly, right? Like, the inside draws, the slow-developing draws that the Bearcats have been running the last 2 weeks, that's a De'Aaron King play. But he can make that work because he is so sudden and so explosive. Desmond Ridder is not that. He is very fast, but he takes a little bit of time to get going. Like, he's not going to go from 0 to 5 yards in a quarter of a second. So all these slow-developing draws that they played the last couple of weeks had just been dead in the water, because once he's in space, he's great, but you have to manufacture the space for him. He's not going to create it himself with his suddenness. And, you know, hopefully they've taken that to heart and come up with some different ideas about how to get him involved in the running game. Like, I'd like to see some plays where he just goes straight vertical as quickly as possible. And if that's, you know, Amazon's like hand sweep or the inverted veer, which is another word for that, maybe that's what you do, where you pull the backside tackle, you read the end from there, and you either let the end chase Mike Warren on the outside zone, or he goes straight vertical to the linebacker level. That's a play that could probably work because that is more apt to his skill set. But anything that's going to take a lot of time to develop and is going to require perfect execution to create a rather large hole. Because this is the other thing about Dez. He is a tall dude. He is not a big dude. So if he gets hit in the pocket, he's not breaking tackles and making plays from there. I mean, if he gets hit, he's pretty much done. He might, you know, stumble forward for a yard or two, but that, even if you have a big play and he gets kind of like chopped on the thigh, it's not going to be as, you know, productive as it could be just because of who he is, how he's built, you know, how he moves. So that's an area where they need to, you know, they have the right idea. They need to get him involved in the running game. It's just they got to come up with some tweaks that are going to work a little bit better for him.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Is like they have to just get his confidence back up to where it still was earlier in the season. But not to say he doesn't have confidence now, but it's like he needs to do everything faster. And that's something we talked about a little bit earlier. It's like once he starts getting in that groove, like hopefully Navy is the exact right opponent for that. Like their defense has been much maligned this season, and they really haven't been great the last couple of weeks. They've had back-to-back 40-point games put on them, albeit by like really good teams. But still, like you should be able to take advantage of Navy at home and put together like a pretty solid game plan to take advantage of their defense. Although Navy has been like one of the best teams in the country at getting turnovers, so I think that's something to watch for. Because if they keep turning the ball over inside their own red zone, like obviously that's bad.
Yeah, especially against a team like Navy when they're, you know, they feast on those short yardage kind of, or sorry, short field kind of situations. I kind of don't believe, I mean, they're 54th in offensive S&P plus. I know Connolly uses a lot of like yards per play and that kind of stuff to kind of equivalize that to account for, you know, the fact that Navy, when you're playing a team like Navy, they're naturally going to have less plays being called over the course of a game just because it's such a, they'll run clock. But I mean, they don't really have much of a passing game, obviously. And the strength of this team has been the front seven. And as long as Brian Wright and Perry Young are healthy, I don't know how Navy really scores more than like 10 or 14 points. And I think a lot of those would come off of like those fluky little turnovers, like on UC side of the field, if that happens.
No, I don't. I think Navy's going to score 20. 25, 28. I don't think them getting points is going to be an issue just because of I'm banking in a stupid UC, you know, area turnover where they just give them a short field and they convert it. But they also have some really explosive, like Malcolm Perry is probably one of the most explosive players in the American. And I don't say that lightly because there's a lot of explosive players, but he seems to do something immense in every single game that they play. And you know, he's a guy that they play at three different positions. He'll play as a B-back, he'll play as a quarterback, he'll play as a slot back. They'll play him at wide receiver. Like, he's just a ready-made big play waiting to happen. On the flip side of this, like, this Navy offense is exactly like every Navy offense that we've seen since the beginning of time, or since Paul Johnson got to Navy 20 years ago, where you know exactly what you're getting. You can bank on it. They're going to be extremely efficient. They're going to get their 3 or 4 yards a play. And unless you blow them up with a big negative play early in the drive, they're going to keep, you know, they're just going to keep rolling 3, 4, 5 yards together until they get to the end zone. That hasn't changed. You know, in the past, they've married that with a fundamentally sound defense that makes up for their lack of athletic ability, because it's Navy and you can't really recruit those kind of athletes, by being fundamentally sound and not giving up easy plays. You know, Navy gives up some really easy plays. Like, they are extremely glitchy in the back end. I don't think I saw, you know, a linebacker make a tackle against Notre Dame, which is not great. You know, defensively, that's not something you're looking for. They get turnovers, yeah, but the amount that they sell out to get those turnovers, that's kind of why they're where they're at in the defensive rankings. They are just, and to top it all off, and this is sacrilegious for a service academy team, they tackle like dog shit. Like, they are terrible. They cannot get people on the ground. And that is why they are as bad as they are on defense right now. They just, they're not good schematically. They don't really line up in the right spots all the time. And even if they do and get a guy in this position where they can make a play, they just don't make the play. So, yeah, this is the perfect defense to play. We need to get Des some confidence.
And just, like, looking at Navy's performances away from home this season, they get, like, kind of surprisingly blown out by Hawaii. Like, they give up 59 points. They did score 41, but they lost. They lost
to SC. That was when Hawaii was the belle of the ball, and then they've come way back down to earth.
That's very true. They lost to SMU on a late two-point conversion, which I guess we can forgive that game with how tough that game was for UC. They get blown out by Air Force, only scoring 7 points. And then they went to San Diego to play Notre Dame. And if you just go by the second half, they beat Notre Dame. So I guess that's a step in the right direction for Navy.
Yeah, the Air Force game was really interesting to me because that game was 7-7 going in like mid-third quarter, right? And then the bottom just dropped out. Like, all of a sudden, they could not get any stops. They could not get anything going on offense. It very quickly mushroomed from a 7-7 game into whatever it ended up being, like 35-7, something like that. Yeah, that one was... That was a shocker, just watching that one happen.
Yeah, I mean, because to your point, I mean, that game was close and played out like most of those academy games go. I mean, very low scoring, very much trading punches, and then Navy just forgot how to play defense, like, which is just so shocking because you play Air Force and Army every single year, and they run basically the same offense. Yeah, just a weird, fluky blowout against Air Force that just, like, never happens.
It seems like when Navy falls apart, it's been in the third quarter. Like, the third quarter against Houston is when they lost that game. Like, as you guys mentioned, the game against Air Force, like, the third quarter was by far their worst quarter, and, like, the quarter they lost the game. Like, it wasn't really the case against Notre Dame, but Notre Dame had such a gigantic lead that they kind of let up in that game. But, like, this is a team that you can put yards on and you can put points on. And, like, the inverse is, like, you have to stop their drives. You can't let them finish drives or you're going to end up in a shootout. And, like, they have had, like, poor shootout luck this year for the most part, like, against Houston and against SMU. But, I don't know. It would make me uncomfortable if this game ended up in a shootout.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, they're so bad on defense. Like guys,
I know, but running. I know. But we said that about SMU, and oh man.
No, SMU is better than Navy. Navy is like UConn bad. Yeah. Kind of.
Nobody's UConn bad.
Hey, somebody is now worse than UConn in S&P defense. They held UMass to 22. That moved them up one.
They're bad defensively. They are atrocious defensively. But it's still like a situation where if UC does fall into that turnover pattern, I mean, Navy's second in the conference a turnover margin, just like SMU was. And if they, like to Scott's point, if they fall into that pattern, start throwing picks, I mean, it's going to be, like, so dangerously close.
Yeah, I'm not denying that this is a possibility of things that could happen, right? That can definitely happen. Like, crazy game played by an incredibly young team that is so far ahead of schedule that they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know how good they are. They don't know how bad they are. They're just kind of floating. Like, they're just kind of out there in the ether. Anything can happen. I'm well aware of that. But Navy is really bad on defense. Like, this is the time to get right, man. Like, everybody's got to get right. Because they are...
No, I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. This is the game to get your offense back on track. But it's just so concerning the last couple of weeks, seeing all those turnovers and all those expectations on offense kind of coming back down to earth, that it's very, very concerning.
But also to match,
the over under in this game is about 50 points, and like that's the first time all season where I looked at that over under for a UC game and was like, yeah, that's pretty much all right.
But like to Matt's point, it's like this is a game that they should really, like, kind of win. You would think, like, the point spread would be like accurate, and the point spread is 13. Like, this shouldn't be a team that they really struggle with putting away. But the one thing with Navy is, like, I don't know. It just seems like you never know, like, what you're going to get from Navy. Like, most of the time it's been not great. But then, like, they beat Memphis at home. Like, that says something about Memphis, but I don't know. It's like they can pull something out. It's like if you get stuck chasing the option like UC did last year, you just end up behind the eight ball. And with how they've been UC's been finishing drives, it does, like, leave something to chance. Because if you can't finish drives against a defense this bad, and against an offense, like, you know, is going to put up yards and put up points, that does leave a combination for this to be inside the point spread.
Well, yeah, and then there's also the simple matter of whatever your average possessions are for each team in a college football game, subtract 3. Because they're going to hold the ball for 40 minutes. And I'm only half joking. So it's a matter of what you do with your time, because you're not going to get, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 cracks at this apple. Like, you need to take care of business early. And like, this is, we've been saying it for the last 3 games, but this is another barometer game for this young team who's way ahead of schedule. Right. If they just take care of business and do what they're supposed to do and just dominate Navy from the jump, then I feel okay about them down this backstretch, thinking that maybe they can get – I still think UCF is – I mean, as good as UC's defense is, they'll give them a chance for a half. But they can beat USF. They can get to 10 wins again for the first time in – what, 8 years? Something stupid like that. 9 years. Right? Yeah.
10 wins? Did they do it in 2012? They beat Duke in the oh, what yeah, was that? Right. Are we counting regular season or are we including the bowl game?
I just want 10 wins, that's all.
Okay, just the double digit, okay.
Get the dub. This is a really good opportunity for this team to kind of show what they're made of and to take 2 really bad performances and take lessons from them, take them to heart, and apply them to this game. Like, they should take care of business, and they need to if they have any aspirations. And at this point, this is not just about this year, right? Like, this is the kind of game that can set you up for success next year, because everybody's back. Like, except for our makeshift patchwork duct-taped offensive line, everybody's back. So they can get a lot of experience, and you know, like, there aren't many opportunities like this where your season can kind of flip on a switch. Because if they drop this game at home to Navy, then I don't feel good about beating USF. They're definitely not beating UCF. They could probably beat ECU. And then what looked like an extremely promising season is going to like end with a thud. Even though they are ahead of schedule, and in my head, I know they're ahead of schedule. If this goes pear-shaped from here on out, nobody's going to feel good about that. So, they, you know, make us feel good, please.
Yeah, definitely. I really agree with you on that point. Just because, like, if we thought, like, this would be a 6-6, like, 7-5 team before the season, and, like, they end up going, like, 7-5 now, like, that would be a pretty big... it would be a letdown with just the performances in the front end and then the back end of the season. Where if, like, you get, like, upset against Navy, like, the next week is pretty much a toss-up, and then you'll probably lose at UCF. Like, that would be a pretty, like, a pretty bad way to finish your season. Like, heading into a bowl game against somebody probably not great. At least a not attractive opponent. Which, they're probably not projected to play anybody, like, great now.
Yeah, I think their best bet is like Duke in like the Gasparilla Bowl or something like that. So that's just where we are at conference wise. Yeah. I mean, that being said, I mean I'm totally on the same page with you guys. I mean, this is the game to really get things right, and it starts with getting on the board early and forcing Navy to have to play catch up. I mean, if we know anything, like the Navy has always, what Navy and really all of the service academy are bad at is playing catch up, you know, getting them out of that rhythm, getting them off tempo. Like, they want to keep the ball on the ground, they want to control time of possession. I mean, Navy, not surprisingly, is leading the conference in time of possession. UC's right behind them. This is a game where you should score a couple of touchdowns in the first quarter and just ride it until the end of the game.
I kind of expect this game to play out similar to Tulane, like in the sense where, like, UC, like, gave up some yards to Tulane, but, like, when it mattered, they got stops, and they were able to put points on Tulane. Except I just think that Navy is going to score a little bit more than Tulane did, and if Navy scores one more touchdown than Tulane did, that would be a single-digit game. And because I think that the spread's a little bit too high. I think UC's going to win, but Navy's going to cover.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm on the spread, I'm with you. But UC's so much better at home, and Navy is just absolute trash anywhere but Annapolis.
Yeah, I kind of have this one something like 30... I think like 30. I think UC's going to score 30. I think it's going to be like Navy like 13 or 14, something like that. I think it's going to be wider than the spread says. I mean, I think they do get right. I mean, I have a lot of concerns. Like, I've basically been beating a dead horse about the offensive line and the turnovers and all that kind of stuff. I still think UC gets it right. And pretty much for that reason that Matt just named, I mean, they're playing at Nipper. I mean, this team is just so much better at home than it is on the road.
Like all young teams.
And honestly, Scott, like, I'm a little, I feel like they'll have more success against Navy, against stopping Navy's offense than they did Tulane. Mainly because Tulane actually has a bit of a passing game. And that's just for that reason on its own. Like, I have no worry about this team shutting down Navy's running game. No matter how funky and fluky it is.
Well, I mean, like, Navy's going to get yards because that's the only way. It's football. Even the worst football teams get yards, right? Like, even the worst. and they're good on offense. They're going to run up 220, 230, 250 rushing yards. Like, I fully expect that. It's a matter of, as you said, it's a matter of making them inefficient yards, yards that don't really matter. And a big part of that is going to be the play of Cortez Broughton and Marquise Copeland up front. And the rest of the defensive line to that end. They have not been playing a deep rotation the last couple games. They really need to play everybody in this game just to keep them fresh. Because I was nowhere near the athlete that these guys are, but I play defensive line, and getting cut blocked for 60 minutes fucking sucks. It's the worst. And no one ever did it successfully on me because I'm short as hell. Low center of gravity. You can't cut me. Just can't cut a guy lower than you. Not happening. These guys have a different problem. They will get cut. But you just need to kind of keep rotating guys fresh, just to keep them going. Like, guys that we haven't really seen the last couple games, like Ethan Tucky, Marquise Van, like Taylor, all of the backups need to play in this game just to keep everybody fresh. And then the other thing I'm really looking for is, let's unleash James Wiggins in the run game, huh? Like, let's just set him loose in the alley, because that'll be fun. I just kind of want to see that. That sounds fun, to just let the freak loose in the alley.
You think it's fun to have a linebacker-sized safety just blitzing half the game?
You know what? I do. I think that is a pro-entertainment move. I'm a big fan of that. Let's do that.
I bet everybody listening is, like, wondering why that's the first time we mentioned James Wiggins, like, this whole podcast. He had the biggest play of the SMU game with his game-winning interception in overtime. Like, one of the most, electric plays of probably the most electric play of the entire season. And we mentioned it on minute, 45 of the podcast.
Okay, so one thing about that play, and I'm sure we've all seen the Wired Wednesday video already, but if you go back and watch that play, the craziest thing about it is when he approaches Prochet and sets up, he's banking on him taking an out route. So he takes a step to the right and still has time to get back in front of him to make the pick. Like, he's unreal. Like, he's going to be in the NFL.
Yeah, on top of that, I think it was Justin Williams of The Athletic had an interview with him, and he said that Wiggins called off Forrest to switch coverage with him because he knew the game was going to go, or the ball was going to go to Prochet, and he knew he could cover him. That is unreal confidence out of a safety.
Yeah, I mean, he's something else. We got a couple more years of him. I'm happy.
Yeah, like the unreal confidence when they really hadn't done Prochet didn't have a big numbers game. He did have 6 catches. Like, that confidence is something you love to see. So we all think they're going to beat Navy. What do you guys think the score is going to be?
Yeah, like I said, I think it'll be 30-14, something like that.
38-28.
See, I still don't know how Navy scores that many points. Like, I can see UC throwing a fluky turnover and maybe bumping it up another touchdown, but I don't know how they get 4 touchdowns.
They're very efficient when they get down to the red zone.
That's fair.
Like, Ohio scored 30 points on them, and Ohio's offense is obviously really good. But it can be done. Like, they can give up points. And I think late it's going to be Navy just running when the game's out of hand. I'll go 31-21.
Oh, pretty much split the difference.
Well, I was going to say 38, then Matt said that, so I had to change my pick.
Great minds can say the same thing. You know, that's perfectly allowed.
Let's run through the conference real quick. The biggest thing from last week, we already mentioned, was UConn losing to UMass. But Houston blew out South Florida. If you take away the first quarter and the fourth quarter, South Florida won that game. But if you add those quarters
in, I like how you're just like removing parts of the games.
Wow, is this again. A Bulls podcast? It's like, wow, they really nailed those middle two quarters. What about the other
Except,
ones? They didn't those, exist. They never happened.
Those 12 minutes of the game were really good for South Florida. It's too bad they play a lot more minutes than that.
Yes, that was going to be my whole setup, and you guys stole the show. Like, another great performance by De'Aaron King. Like, who is he going to be the first team, like, quarterback this year?
How can he not be?
Yeah, like, he definitely
has to be. Mackenzie Milton is the best player. He has not had the best season.
And, like, Houston's offense, like, one of the best offenses in the entire nation. He's just been, like, electric. He's been, like, a step up over Greg Ward. Like, how could that happen?
Yeah, Major Applewhite's a bit of a good coach. I'm a little surprised to see Houston that they're not ranked yet. Like, I knew South Florida was going to drop last week, but, I mean, they were up into 17th, and, like, the coaches and AP poll and the College Football Playoff Committee didn't even decide to make them ranked. Shocking to me.
How is that surprising?
Well, I feel like they actually did Central Florida a service this time.
Yeah,
like,
because they remembered them from their ballots from last year. And they just slotted them into the spot. Nothing changed.
Hey, they're at least 5 spots ahead of where they were living for half the season last time.
Good. That means they'll get all the way up to 9th now. Woo! Right.
And no one's denying that the committee is they've got their heads up their asses when it comes to these rankings. But I was shocked to see Houston not up there in the top 20.
You know what? Color me surprised when you put like 7 non-football people in a room to talk about football. They're going to make some stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Who knows that that would go badly?
Like, 3 loss Iowa State, like, makes the playoff over, like, 1 loss Houston, whose, like, only loss was to the same team Iowa State beat at home. It's like, who knows? Who knows?
What yeah, Houston thinking. Would boat race Iowa State. Like, it would not be close.
Well, we might find out, because Houston might be playing Iowa State in a bowl game. We'll see.
I think the only other thing that was interesting about the playoff rankings was Fresno State, like, ended up in the top 25. Putting them in key positions.
Wait, what?
Putting them in key positions, if UCF loses. Like, maybe they could end up taking...
23rd? Are you joking?
No. Fresno State is... they had a really glitchy loss to Minnesota, but Fresno State has been, like, laying waste to people. Their defense... is better than Temple's. Like, it's
I mean, I don't want to play the whole strength of schedule card, but, I mean, have you seen their schedule?
Have you seen ours?
Well, I'm not saying we should be ranked.
We both played UCLA, and that they really beat UCLA. We just kind of beat UCLA.
Yeah, but it was also the first game of the season with a freshman quarterback.
Like, I can defend the Fresno State ranking. Like, they are by far the second best team in this group, right? Of the non-Power 5 schools, this is probably the second best team. The three, like, if you're doing a top 5, the rest of them are from the American, but they're really, really good.
That is super concerning. I didn't even notice they were on there. So, yeah, that is a little concerning because Central Florida stumbles.
But I think Central Florida will probably have to lose twice for Fresno State to pass them, though. And Fresno State has to go to Boise.
They would have to lose in the regular season, and then they have to lose again to like Houston. They'd have to lose another game, and then Houston.
See, I even think if they lost to Houston, Houston would just jump up in the rankings and like pass them.
It depends on how far. It depends on how much progress they make. Like, their schedule is wide open until the conference championship game, because that Memphis game is not looking particularly robust.
Yeah, to say the least. And unlike Central Florida, like, Houston doesn't have like any like national TV spotlight. Like, Central Florida is going to get tonight when they host Temple. And one of the early season conference games of the year, like right now, the game that decides the East Division, Like, Central Florida's a 10.5-point favorite. What are you guys thinking about this game? Does Temple have a chance to pull the upset? I think they played UCF last year and they got blown out. But...
No. I want to say no, but that defense, I mean, Mackenzie Milton has looked a little...
greedy.
I don't know. He's been shaky this year.
The word you're looking for is greedy. He doesn't.
Greedy, is that what it
is? No. He's trying to do too much is the issue. And that is, as Desmond Ridder can attest to, that is a bad idea against Temple.
So you have Temple on the upset?
I have Temple to cover, potentially. I do not think they will win.
I think I probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think going to Orlando is going to be too tough. I think Central Florida is going to blow them out.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, UCF's secondary is not that great. Like, last year's was much better. And this is a really good Temple group of receivers. With a quarterback who is all or nothing. Like, he's just throwing bombs. There's no intermediate to Russo's game. That can make things interesting. Like I said, I don't think they're going to win, but I do think they have the potential to cover this game.
Yeah, we didn't really we didn't get the chance to talk about the Temple game, but that was definitely clear. It was really boom or bust with him in that game. He was like either... like slinging the ball perfect, or he was throwing picks left and right. And if, like, that's really what killed Temple last year, is like, they turned the ball over a ton. I think they did that in both their Florida games. They turned the ball over like a million times and ended up getting blown out against both of those teams. I kind of think something similar is going to happen with that game. Is there any other conference that you guys want to hit on this week? Because the schedule
is really bad.
The schedule is pretty bad.
A Houston SMU could get pointsy. I mean, over under a 71, and neither of those teams really plays defense. I mean, SMU, for all of their faults, they know how to put points on the board for the most part. I don't know, that could be a potential upset if you're kind of keeping an eye on things. Like, you know, obviously you want to keep an eye on Alabama-LSU, you know, Saturday night. But, I mean, keep an eye on Houston-SMU. If that thing gets to, like, a touchdown or so in the fourth quarter, that'd be real interesting.
Memphis at East Carolina could get interesting. Not because East Carolina is going to win, but because they have a ferocious pass rush and generate tackles for loss by the ton. And Memphis is all boom or bust. So that will either work very well for ECU and they'll stay in this game until the very end, or they will just get boat raced within 10 minutes. One or the other. So just pay attention to it for a little bit, and then you'll know if you need to pay attention for the rest of it.
Otherwise, I mean, Tulane, South Florida, I mean, maybe Tulane beats South Florida. I mean, I can see that. South Florida's just so weird this year. Go ahead, Scott.
That's what the game I was going to talk about real quick. Like, Tulane, okay. Like, South Florida, like, obviously, like, they haven't played a full game this season. I guess maybe Georgia Tech. Like, that's another game where they'll probably look terrible for, like, the first half. And then, like, win, like, 24 to, like, 17. I don't know. Like, that's just a weird team that should be a lot better. South Florida's only a 7-point favorite against Tulane.
In a bit of trivia, when was the last time a 1-win team was a 18-point favorite in a conference game? I don't know, but Tulsa is.
They're an 18-point favorite? Holy crap. Wow, and I mean, they're playing a 1-7 UConn team, so it's not like they're playing an FBS or FCS school or something. Or are they? Because according to all the UConn people on Twitter, they want to just basically get rid of football, which I'm okay with.
Over-under in that game is only 58.5. That seems like a good opportunity to bet the over.
Yeah, I don't know, but if you just set two sickly dogs at each other, is anything going to happen? Or are they just going to whimper at each other and just kind of fall down?
Hey, Tulsa's almost beaten people.
Yes, they have almost beaten quite a few people and didn't. It's a very almost season for them. It's like they almost started playing in September and then just didn't.
A game, a battle of terrible Tulsa offense, like S&P 119. It's terrible UConn defense. S&P 129. Tulsa somehow has a near top 50 defense, and UConn has... Well, their offense is trash. But still, points could happen. I'm going the over, just on terrible instinct.
Yeah, and I would also apropos of nothing of these games, but I would just like to point out that the conference has neatly sorted itself into a good half and a bad half. That was very kind of them. We have 6 teams, 41st or above, and then the rest of them are 96 or worth. So, go AC. You're really nailing it this year.
No, I mean, that is, I would rather have that than having, what do they have in 2010 or something, where UConn won the conference at 8-4?
True, fair point, but this is every American basketball season since it became the American, except now it's football.
Yeah, really, it's like if they split the basketball into divisions, this is exactly what it would look like almost every single year. It's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, I like a neatly ordered world, but this is kind of crazy.
It's even like the symmetry in the East where, 2-4-0 teams, 2-0-4 teams.
And that ends this week's Fun with Numbers segment.
And that ends this week's podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back early next week to preview basketball. We didn't forget it. But until then, go Bearcats, beat Navy.